Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. The big news in baseball from yesterday, Derek Jeter and Larry Walker are going to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Also still getting to the aftermath of the Houston Astros and Boston Red Sox issues. With the cheating scandal, the Mets now on today did name their new manager replacing Carlos Beltran in Luis Rojas. Let's talk about it all with one of the best from the MLB Network, and that's Brian Kenny. You could watch Brian as he hosts MLB's Network's MLB Now weekdays at 2 p.m. and then again at 7:30 p.m. Eastern throughout the offseason. Brian, appreciate you taking a few minutes. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, it's been a very busy time of the year for baseball. I know you're the best at this Hall of Fame stuff. So give me the reaction to Jeter getting in. Everyone knew it was going to happen. The question was, would it be at 100%? And Larry Walker was getting close, and he made a rise the last few years, but we weren't sure if he was going to get in, but definitely well-deserved.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, first, you don't want to bury the lead that this is the type of player that the Hall of Fame was built on. You know, this is the type of player that attracts national attention, that's an iconic figure. Just like, you know, 1939, the museum opened up, and there was, you know, was Babe Ruth and Hannes Wagner and the all-time greats. And I really think Derek Jeter is up there with, you know, Mantle, DiMaggio, Brooks Robinson, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays. He is a, you know, iconic figure, a first ballot Hall of Famer, however you want to phrase it. But he's the type of player that the Hall of Fame gained its legitimacy around, that these are this is our royalty. This is our, you know, baseball royalty. And Jeter was not only a great player, he handled himself with grace and class in New York City, winning 5 World Series titles and 7 pennants. So that's the lead. And Larry Walker, you know, we aired the news conference of the two of them. And I'd even written this before because I host the ceremony in the summertime. It's nice to share the ceremony with somebody. It's nice to share the stage. And even during the news conference today, having Larry Walker there, who I think is, you know, one of the top 10 right fielders of all time, and he's a very worthy Hall of Famer, having him there with Derek Jeter is good. You just don't want to have one guy. I know Ted Simmons will be there, and hopefully someone from Marvin Miller's family this summer, but it just adds to it. There's room for more players of this generation, and there's also I'm also pro joy, and I think to see the joy on Larry Walker and the joy of for Colorado Rockies fans is a positive thing for all of us.
You may have to wear a SpongeBob SquarePants shirt now to the ceremony.
Yeah, that was great yesterday. That was unexpected.
Brian Kenny here with us on CBS Sports Radio. It's the Zach Gelb Show. So the conversation with Jeter, I know we should be celebrating him getting in the Hall of Fame, but one voter, we still don't know who the voter is, elected to keep him off the ballot. I'm just fascinated, Brian, what the explanation is, because one thing I don't like, and I've said this over the years, and I said it last year with Mariano Rivera, and people were annoyed, some people that he got in at unanimous decision. Well, look at all the other all-time greats that didn't get in at 100%. I get the point, but I don't see how anyone could really keep Jeter off the ballot. I don't get what the potential reasoning could be.
I don't get it either. The only plausible reason that I would find plausible is if you used all 10 slots, which is not as much of a thing this year. The last couple of years, you legitimately could say, I'm going 12 deep on my list. I only have 10. And if I don't put Chipper Jones on my list, that's why. Because I wanted to keep Fred McGriff alive. Or I wanted to get, you know, Fred McGriff or Scott Rolen, keep him above the 5%. Because guys like Jim Edmonds and Bernie Williams have fallen off the ballot, you know, by falling off 5%. So maybe someone did that. That's the only reason that is anywhere legitimate. Because other than that, It makes zero sense. There's nothing that you could, no way you could possibly justify it. At the same time, look, I'm trying to get past vote shaming. I used to be a big vote shamer. Do you know what I mean? I used to, you know, call out these old writers, these old guard writers, saying you're not doing your proper comparative analysis. You know, really think before you vote, and hey, dig deep on Ron Santo, and hey, take a closer look at some of these other candidates, and you know, who it is. I'm big on Dwight Evans and Keith Hernandez. Do a little more work. But I would rip into these writers years ago, but now, as a society, all we do is rip into each other. The vote shaming that exists on social media is so vicious, it's not fun anymore. You know, it's not, and guys really just, it seems to get savaged. So I understand why the Hall has actually rebuffed the request from the Writers Association and said, you have the option of not going public. Normally I would say, hey, give your vote and defend it. You should be fine doing that. If you can't, don't vote. But I understand in this day and age that you could be savaged online, that I understand why the Hall wouldn't want that to happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of nasty things that are said on the internet. There's no doubt about that as we're talking with Brian Kenny. With Schilling, I've said this for years, that Schilling should be in. I think the politics play a role in it. I think that, you know, people hold it against him. I don't agree with everything he says, obviously, politically. Where do you stand on Schilling?
Oh, I was surprised that Schilling didn't get voted in first ballot at the time. Remember, his stock was sky high. He was a flat-out winner, great postseason pitcher, one of the best of all time, had won a title with the Diamondbacks, two with the Red Sox. He basically drove two of those championships, you know, on his back. You know, obviously with others, the Red Sox were great, and Randy Johnson was with the Diamondbacks. But without him, they don't win either of those titles. And I just thought he would get in. He debuted at 39% and then fell to 29%. And I remind people of this. At the time, he was doing Sunday Night Baseball for ESPN. He was not the pariah that he is now. He hadn't made any of those, or many of those, incendiary comments on social media. So there was something where the writers were missing something with him, and I guess it's just the old-fashioned number of wins. He had 216 wins, and that wasn't enough. Now, that's ignorance. Now, beyond that, I think the character clause has come up where many writers use that to say, I don't want to vote for players who used performance-enhancing drugs. And if you're already thinking along those lines, you could extend that to think, you know what, I don't want to grant this man baseball's highest honor. It's an honor. I'm voting to see if this man should be honored or not. And you can say, I don't believe he should be representing baseball and deserves that honor. I don't think it's far-fetched. I don't think it's a left-wing conspiracy. I think it's that the guy has done a lot of things to embarrass himself and baseball. I'd say it to his face. I don't enjoy saying that. And I think a lot of his things on social media are things that he wouldn't be saying in person. I think, like a lot of us, we become a caricature on social media. I think that's somewhat happened to Kurt, but I would understand someone not voting for him, even though playing-wise, he certainly is above the Hall of Fame line.
Does that mean we need to take the character clause out in the guidelines? Because, you know, I look at the goal for me, the way I interpret it, and everyone has a different interpretation, and people look at the rules a lot more carefully and all that. I get that. But I want great players in the Hall of Fame. Good guy or not, whatever, you know, even the steroid guys, Bonds and Clemens, you know, I just feel it's ridiculous that we hold them out of the Hall of Fame, because for me, the Hall of Fame should be able to tell the history of all the all-time great players, and I consider those guys great players. I know you go to an exhibit and in the Hall of Fame and they make mention of them, but when you're in that plaque section, I think we should see these names, you know, good character or not.
I think I disagree with that. I'm not so resolute on it. I'd like to see the character clause swing both ways, and I'd like to see players like Dale Murphy and Don Mattingly get extra credit for being players that everybody in the game says that they are the standard by which others should be measured. At the same time, I have to say, are we outraged now about sign stealing and that sort of thing? I think everybody is. Oh, this is terrible. The Astros, they're dirty. They're cheating. Well, they were surreptitiously looking to gain an advantage. Well, what is taking steroids? Surreptitiously looking to gain an unfair advantage. And that's what these players did, or are suspected of doing. And I would say you're choosing to honor them or not. I've said this for years now, I have to go back and forth on this, but I would try to choose to honor the clean player. I would rather give my vote to Fred McGriff than Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens. You know, and I don't like it. I don't, I, I I don't enjoy all this steroid talk over the last 20 years. And yet, if I was choosing, I would say those guys, they cheated other players. And I would choose not to honor them.
Does that mean that we should not let managers, I know the commissioner, Bud Selig's in, should that not happen then, just wondering? Because that was all the same era.
Look, I don't extend it past, you know, people have said that about Tony La Russa and managers. I don't expect managers or coaches or their fellow players to narc on people. Or a commissioner, why didn't you do something? Actually, the Players Association was much more instrumental in blocking steroid testing than the commissioner's office. Much more. I've lived through it. It's a fact. But you're responsible for your actions. These guys chose to surreptitiously take hormones, testosterone, to gain an advantage. And they had to do it, you know, systemically. It's not something you did once and you made a mistake or you drove drunk or, you know, you got in a bar fight or something like that. No, this is something you did month after month, year after year. You chose to do it over the long haul, over several years. That is an organized, systematic way to cheat. So I would choose not to honor those guys with baseball's highest honor.
With Clemens and Bonds, they're now just went through year 8 in the voting process, so two more years left. 61% this year for Roger, and I think it was, a little under 61% for Barry Bonds this year. Do you think they'll get in by year 10? Do you think people will come around the next 2 years?
I don't think so, but I'm not positive on that. I think it's going to be different next year because a lot of the top players have cleared the ballot now. Next year, Curt Schilling heads the class. The new class is guys like Torrey Hunter, who are, I don't want to say not strong candidates, but they're not first ballot guys or anything like that. So Tim Hudson, Mark Burley, Torrey Hunter. And I think writers will look down that ballot, and who knows how many. They need about 55 or 56 more to look down that ballot and say, what am I doing, really? I think I'll switch. But I don't think that'll happen. I think those who are not voting for him are doing it for a reason, and I think they'll hold out for two more years. I think the tough part will be year 10, A-Rod and Big Poppy hit the ballot. And that's going to be something else. So who knows what happens in that year? That's 2022.
The A-Rod one, I can't wait to see what happens because his image, as you know, is totally different than what it was a few years ago.
Yeah, and it shows you that things change. You know, this guy's a pariah. This guy, you know, nobody wants anything to do with him. And then suddenly, oh, he's back up on top. So I think it will be fascinating to see what his vote total becomes. And that's part of the reason why I believe they changed the 15 years to 10 years. Because in 15 years, like by the time A-Rod would be on the ballot for year 15, who knows what the voting will be. And I'm sure I hear from many writers who say, hey, there's a couple of guys who I think did steroids who were already in, so I don't know, I'll just vote for them all. I don't get that. I don't agree with that. However, certain writers think that. And I think when David Ortiz, who failed survey testing, gets in, and I think he's going to get in, I think then they'll look at A-Rod and go, I don't know, what am I doing? Hey, and Bonds and Clemens are still sitting there. So is Sammy Sosa. So if you believe in performance only, have at it. Vote them all in. Don't forget Sammy. Get Sammy in there,
too. I'm with you.
Hey, don't forget Manny. Manny failed tests, but if you're good with that, then go all performance only. Performance only is a consistent vote. I don't agree with it, but at least it's consistent.
No, I agree with you. People should be consistent. I've said that now for years, that if you're going to put one roid guy in, you know, throw the rest of the PED guys in as well. And in my mock ballot, that doesn't mean for anything. You could see that it does go in line with that. A few more with Brian Kenny. Is there a guy, you know, clearly we disagree on the clean guys against the guys that we're using, but is there a guy in your mind that is clean that you thought, you know, over the last few years or maybe even the last year or two has been overlooked when looking back at the results yesterday?
Oh, yeah, I already said his name, Fred McGriff. I think when you look at Fred McGriff from any angle, he was a great player. By the way, when he was playing, he was seen as a great player. He was a game changer. When he was traded, when he was a free agent, he was a big guy. He was a pennant chase changing player. And between 93, 94, and 1995, this guy just was a flat out monster for the Atlanta Braves. He was everything advertised. And unfortunately, there was no World Series or playoffs in 1994, but he was a great playoff player. He was the best player on the Braves team when they won their one World Series title, the Atlanta Braves, their one title. And he was an outstanding, consistent over a 15-year period, power hitting first baseman. And I've done the essays on MLB Now. He also, you know, unfortunately hit 493 home runs. Now, I don't need to hang my hat on that, but the image for McGriff, unfortunately, was tied to not getting 500 home runs at a time when the juiced guys, the guys you're fine with putting in the Hall of Fame, shot right past him like he was going out of style. And that was McGuire, Sammy, and Bonds. And up until then in the history of baseball, players were only getting, you know, 40 home runs a pop to move up the all-time home run list. Suddenly that was almost doubled. And so everybody, when he retired, 493 was still a lot of home runs. 5 years later, there was guys just shooting past him that were well above him still playing. So it was completely devalued, and Fred barely stayed on the ballot. But Fred McGriff, in his 20s, was every bit the player Barry Bonds was offensively. All right, not defensively, but offensively. He was that good. I think he was like neck and neck with Bonds in his 20s, right? Skinny Barry, when Barry was about the best player in baseball, neck and neck with him offensively. That's how good Fred McGriff was. He's fallen off the ballot, and I think that's wrong. I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
I'm with you on McGriff as well. You can watch Brian host MLB Network's MLB Now weekdays at 2 p.m. and again at 7:30 p.m. throughout the offseason. Two more with Brian Kenny here with us, and he's been great talking about the Hall of Fame on CBS Sports Radio. It's the Zach Gelb Show. Astros and Red Sox, what do you feel about those two teams right now in terms of what they're going to look like from a performance standpoint this year?
Well, look, the Astros are still going to be pretty good. I don't know what – I mean, I think they're – the era of dominance for the Astros, I think, has closed. As far as, like, the era just ended, as far as them moving forward. But even the remnants of what Jeff Luhnow built is still a powerful club, even without Gerrit Cole. I mean, they won 107 games last year. They're still going to be outstanding. Now, maybe that's not enough to get past the Yankees this year, but they'll still be very good. The Red Sox have all sorts of issues. I mean, Chaim Bloom, who comes over from the Rays, like, he inherited all sorts of headaches.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd said on the air, Zach, you'll crack up, but I said at the time, I said, hey, if you're a GM, I mean, in the real world, you're a real life person with a wife and children, and you have to move and you have to get into a house, and then you have to live somewhere and do all that and then go to work. Would you rather have the GM job with the Pirates or the Red Sox? And I think I might take the Pirates.
Wow.
You know, Chaim Bloom doesn't come over with, like, you know, that they say the blank checkbook. No, that money's spent. He's in debt. He walks in, he's in debt. It's like, hey, trade our best player.
Yeah,
hey, what are you going to do with David Price? He's a problem. Hey, Chris Sale no longer throws with any velocity. And then it's like, hey, we're over payroll. Cut payroll. Hey, by the way, we still have to win. I mean, we have to win every year or we'll fire you. He's got real problems.
Let me, before we let Brian Kenny run, and this has been great, the Mets, do you think they had to get rid of Beltran? Clearly, Manfred, in my opinion, wanted Beltran out. The Mets could have pushed back. They elected not to do so, and now Rojas coming in, been in that organization. Give me a little flavor on Beltran and also Rojas.
I think that, you know, it made sense for them to just to part ways. The way it all unfolded in real time, there was really not much else they could do. Also, like the one thing a new manager gives you, especially coming off the Mickey Callaway season, the one thing a manager gives you is a new start, fresh start. Hey, here's our new guy, no baggage. We're excited, and you kind of trot him out. I mean, the manager is he's your public relations front, and suddenly it's a public relations disaster because you're bringing Beltran over. The reason that Beltran was a hot candidate was because he was skilled in these arts. You know, at first it was legitimate, you know, arts, and then it became black ops, you know. So that's the reason why he was so highly valued. So how are you going to sell that guy? And if things go wrong, how are you going to sell him? It was a no-win situation. They had to cut him loose.
Yeah, he should have hired Joe Girardi anyway. But that's a different topic for another day. That's just a disgruntled and frustrated Mets fan like myself that you're talking to. Brian Kenny, really do appreciate the perspective. This was awesome.
All right, Zach. Thank you. Take care.
There's Brian Kenny. By the way, this is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios, who found a better way to mortgage so you can focus on making your new house home. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. And we come back, a little interesting nugget that came out of Boston the other day, and it gives you a little insight on a theory that I had right when this Astros Red Sox scandal was released to the public with the punishment coming down to the Houston Astros. We'll discuss that and more next. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. plays nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-E-L-B. And also, let me remind you, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, and it's sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. I was reading this story today, and it was about a report from a few days ago. And it was from Gary Tanguay out in Boston, who is a longtime media member, now works with NBC Sports Boston. And it said Red Sox owner John Henry had every intention to keep Alex Cora as the team's manager despite any potential discipline given to Cora as part of the Astros sign-stealing scandal. But Henry changed his mind when the possibility arose that the Red Sox could be stripped of their 2018 World Series title. That's what Gary Tanguay had to say. I said this from the start. I think it's so obvious. I thought it was crystal clear as could be. Rob Manfred, going back to the Apple Watch incident in 2017, made the decision then and let it be known that if any team has any infraction, whether it was with technology, when it comes to the sign stealing and all that, that the people that would be held responsible would not be the players. The players would not be punished. And the people that would be punished and the people that would be held accountable are the general managers and the managers. And you see what did transpire. Astros hit with the punishment. Then the next day, Jim Crane, or not even the next day, the next hour, Jim Crane comes out in front of the media and says, we're taking matters into our own hands as well, considering what the punishment was. We're going to one-up it. We're going to one-top it, and get rid of both Hinch and get rid of also Jeff Luhnow as well to make them look like they were the good people here and they wanted to do more than what the MLB did punish. Are we stupid? Come on. What happened behind the scenes, Rob Manfred said, this is punishment A, this is punishment B. You take punishment A, you could survive. You take punishment B, it's going to be a whole lot worse. And with punishment B, it came with them keeping Luno and them also keeping A.J. Hinch. They took punishment A. Then with the Boston Red Sox, you could just tell in that farewell press conference, in that dismissal press conference of Alex Cora, it seemed as if there was a funeral going on. It was such a somber scene. They didn't want to say anything critical or anything negative about Alex Cora. Why? Because they never wanted to fire Alex Cora. They never wanted to move on and part ways with Alex Cora. They thought, okay, commissioner would come down with the punishment, whatever it will be for Alex Cora when we find that out. Then Alex Cora will be out of baseball for, let's say, a year, 2 years. We'll survive. We'll weather the storm. The team is even moving around all these pieces right now, what Brian Kenny was telling you, with the salary trimming and all of that. And maybe Mookie Betts could be traded too. Who knows how much longer David Price will be there. And then, hey, we'll be able to recover in 2 years. You know, we'll be fine. We're the Boston Red Sox. And then Rob Manfred said, well, you just saw what we did with the Astros. You could keep Alex Cora, and your punishment's going to be pretty bad, or you could get rid of Alex Cora. We advise you to get rid of Alex Cora, and maybe we'll let you off with a break. I'll give you some type of punitive action, but it won't be as severe and harsh as what it is if you want to keep Alex Cora and go against Major League Baseball and go against what the commissioner office wants to do. Alex Cora, then on that Wednesday, was sent packing, and they moved on. Then there was that team, the New York Mets. The Mets did nothing wrong. The Mets are the one team that could push back and actually fight getting rid of their manager and Carlos Beltran. Well, the commissioner made a very bad issue and something that was going to be a firestorm either way. He added more fuel to the fire because not a single player in 2017, not a single player was named in that report other than Carlos Beltran, who's no longer a player.
Except I thought all players were getting immunity here for their testimony. And there was going to be no punishment. Well, it's a bad optic thing, and it's bad optics when you have a manager who was a player when it happened, but now a manager still being able to get a free pass, which is what would have happened with Carlos Beltran. The Mets could have fought back. The Mets could have said, nope, not happening. I do believe baseball behind the scenes when they met Jeff Wilpon and also Brody Van Wagenen, when they met with the commissioner's office suggested that you move on. It's not good for the game. It's not a good look for the game. You don't want to do this, Brody and Jeff. You want to keep in good standing with the league. You don't want to fight back. They could have fought back. And you know what? It's probably the better decision to move on because you don't know what else is going to circulate and what else is going to come out with this story. But every single thing that you see, and I can understand why Manfred's doing this, he wants the players to be fine, and he wants anyone in an authoritative position to take the hit for this so this doesn't happen again. And that way, if a team hears about it happening again, the manager and the general manager are going to put an end to it right away and say, we are not doing this. Why aren't we doing this? Because I'm going to lose my job. And notice with the Astros and with the Red Sox, when those things were happening, Dombrowski's no longer there. They moved on for other reasons. But I bet you he would have been facing punishment. And who knows what punishment will eventually happen with him. Cora out of a job. I don't know if he'll work again in baseball. A.J. Hinch out of a job. Who knows if he's going to work again in baseball. And Jeff Luhnow out of a job as well. So when I read this report that the Boston Red Sox from Gary Tanguay would have kept Alex Cora and they were planning on keeping Alex Cora no matter what happened, all of a sudden change when the commissioner got wind of it. The commissioner heard of this, and then he said, oh, you think you're keeping Alex Cora? Well, I'll give you punishment A, punishment B, and one of those punishments that he was going to hand down was that you would lose your World Series title, and you'd be stripped of your World Series title, which I think taking away and vacating a championship is as idiotic as it could be. What, we got to eliminate history because people cheated? No, stop it. We don't take away championships. That is dumb. This is not the NCAA where, oh, let's take down the Louisville National Championship banner and let's hand it out to another team or not have anyone be the national champions that year. That's stupid. That's a bunch of garbage. That shouldn't happen. However, the commissioner is going about it the way that he is, and he took a stance in 2017, and you have to respect him for that. That it wasn't going to be the players that were going to be held responsible. It was the people in authority positions that are the general managers and the managers. And so far, the Houston Astros have said, yes, we will agree with what you're recommending, and they move on with their GM and their manager. The Red Sox maybe had to get threatened a little bit, but they followed suit too. And then the New York Mets, who were just sitting there, minding their own business, doing nothing wrong, ended up losing their manager as well, and they did hire and promote Luis Rojas today. Who, of course, is the son of Felipe Alou and is also the brother of Moises Alou. I think there's like a 15-year difference, though, between Moises Alou being the older brother and Luis Rojas being the younger brother as well. So the commissioner has clearly taken the side that this is not acceptable, which is fine. And he has clearly taken the side that if you're a manager and a GM, you will lose your job. And the sign stealing, I'm sure there'll still be sign stealing going on. But this year, everyone's going to be getting watched very closely. And the year after that, who knows what will happen throughout history. But I don't think you'll be seeing teams using technology in an illegal way this year. And if they do, well, get prepared for your manager and your general manager to lose their job. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. When we come back on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio, there's breaking news with Antonio Brown. We'll get to it once again in what is the sad and the big fall from grace of one Antonio Brown. We'll touch on that on the other side.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. Woo! He's glad you're still here. Now back to The Zach Gelb Show.
He knew it was only a matter of time where eventually Antonio Brown was going to get arrested. You knew it was a matter of time. And originally when this Antonio Brown stuff started at first, people would always say,
well, nothing really criminal is going on, but you know something's wrong. And the first time that I said to myself, Antonio Brown has something really wrong with him, is something really going on wrong with him, was the night that he was on that elliptical and wasn't even making sense, saying, AB is my biggest opponent. I got to defeat the opponent. I got to work. It's AB up against AB. I'm trying to follow it. And I go, it's even tough to recall it right now because it just didn't make sense. And then you have him doing that elliptical saying, you call me Mr. Big Chest. And that's why people were laughing at it. People laughed at it because they said, all right, the Mr. Big Chest stuff. I remember when that video came out, I said, something is wrong with this guy. Something is not okay. And in this last year, it all came crashing and burning down on Antonio Brown, where at first he loses the job with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, he's there. They say we had enough, and they end up trading him to Oakland. And I remember the first legal situation that I guess did really become public and well-known that you remember talking about was whatever happened on that balcony. And then he had the hot air balloon coming into training camp, which you laugh at. And then you find out he's not showing up to practices here and there. He goes missing in week 17. And there's always an excuse that Antonio Brown is making. And at first, when these stories start initially coming to the scene, you say, all right, there's two sides to everything. You don't know what's going to happen. Then Antonio Brown, when he gets to Oakland, he has the frostbite with the cryotherapy. And all right, once again, you could say accidents happen. Then you find out he's skipping the OTAs and all the practices because of the helmet. And he was trying to fight something. And he was trying to make it out that the NFL and the system was against him. And he's throwing out the race card to Brady and Rodgers with their helmets and all of that. And everyone's sitting there and saying, AB, everyone knew you had to change your helmet. There's no exceptions with this rule. So why are you putting up a big fight and making it a big mess and putting up a big fuss and a big stink about this helmet? Even if you're so comfortable and this is a great helmet, the helmet isn't what makes Antonio Brown. It was the story that we all once loved of being a 6-round draft pick. Central Michigan. No one knew who the guy was. Dominating football. Preeminent wide receiver in football. And then in Oakland, where if you gave him a pass in Pittsburgh, I remember a lot of people, including myself, were critical of Mike Tomlin. Were critical on Big Ben. And critical about Antonio Brown. And as that entire situation does play out in Pittsburgh, even if you give him a pass and you say, hey, it's a new beginning, it's a different team, a different organization, maybe he'll change, he doesn't even make it to the regular season. And what ended the relationship in Pittsburgh? People are trying to hold him accountable. What ended the relationship in Oakland? He tried to fight Mike Mayock. He tried to punch Mike Mayock on that practice field because Mayock said, your guarantees are getting voided. Because that happens when you get fined in the way the contract, I guess, was worded. And if you don't show up to work, it's a simple process. And this even works for in any business, but let's just take our business. If Tom DiBenedetto doesn't show up to work one day and there's no explanation, most likely they get rid of him. Or they give him some type of punishment. If I don't show up to work one day and I don't let anyone know why I'm missing, they're probably not going to pay me for that day. And that's a logical situation. That's something I could understand. But for Antonio Brown, it was, man, this person's racist. Man, this person's trying to hold me accountable. All these excuses. Anytime a person in a position of authority tries to tell AB what to do, that's the issue. That's the problem. So he gets what he wants. He gets the New England Patriots. He gets released. Because even the Raiders said it's done. And at that time, he's running around saying, I'm free, I'm free, I'm free. And he's calling up his grandmother. And you're watching this from afar where he recorded Gruden and all that. And even Gruden, he knew what he was getting himself into.
Gruden was giving him a pass left and right. Oh, we wish him the best, all that, blah, 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 blah. And Mayock was the only one that stepped in and actually had a backbone and said, we're not putting up with this. No way. No how. You cannot do this. So they get rid of Mr. Big Chess. He goes to New England, and then eventually while he was there, Belichick and Kraft, they get rid of him. They know what the talent was, but they get rid of him because of all these allegations that were coming out. And they gave him a new slate, a new start. But you have to conform to the Patriot way. And when he was texting one of the accusers, who I don't even think, it was the first accuser who had a lawsuit. The second one, she was just talking to someone. I don't even think she ever pressed any filed any lawsuit, if memory serves me right. And he texted her and was like intimidating her. Like, how dumb can you be? But this is a guy, because he was built up the entire way and he was told how great he was the entire way, that he became too big for his own good. And now when everyone's telling you, you're the man, you're the man, you're the man, you're the best, you're the greatest thing ever, you become invincible. You think you're invincible. And you think you can get away with everything, when in reality, you can't. And who knows what is true or not, but you knew after three teams gave up on him, and he's continuing with all these crazy videos, and Rosenhaus is trying to get him help, and it's making Rosenhaus even look bad. You know, I remember getting on Rosenhaus, you keep on defending this guy because of a paycheck. And even Rosenhaus said he had enough. And Rosenhaus got rid of him. And he said, I want you back, but you need to go get help. So if you think about it, other than the guys that are his friends, that are there with him every day, and who knows who that is, but the last person really connected to him from a football standpoint that has connections to teams gave up on him. Because even he said, whatever I'm saying, it's going in one ear, out the other. And say what we want about Rosenhaus, he was trying to get him help. And even AB lambasted him the other day on Instagram. And in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, there's been a story, it seems like each and every day, of the cops being at Antonio Brown's house. And even if you had a legitimate gripe or a legitimate argument and something was going against your way, you don't throw things at people. You don't curse at people like the way that he was in front of his children too, and using gross words to those children's mother. It was repulsive. And he's thinking he's looking good by going on Instagram, showing the entire world, oh, look at me, look at me, look at me. No, you look like a fool in that spot. An absolute fool. So the other day we hear about this battery and these accusations and everything, and you find out that it was the friend. And then today, a warrant has actually been issued, according to Andy Slater, for Antonio Brown's arrest. Here it is from Pro Football Talk. I'll read it to you real quickly. An arrest warrant has been issued for free agent receiver Antonio Brown via Andy Slater, Fox Sports 640. Brown faces charges of burglary with battery. The warrant arises from a Tuesday incident during which Brown refused to pay the driver of a moving truck for delivering property from California. Brown allegedly threw a rock at the truck as the driver left with the property. Then when the moving company informed the driver to return after Brown supposedly agreed to pay the $4,000 plus an extra $860, Brown allegedly refused to pay more than $4,000, allegedly battered the driver, and allegedly removed his property from the truck after Glenn Holt, who has already been arrested, that was the friend, I guess, took the keys and opened the truck, the doors to the truck. Slater adds, Andy Slater, that is, via Pro Football Talk, there is no bond, but that is presumably a decision that would be made by a judge after Brown is arrested and processed. Either way, Brown faces a serious legal problem, and the fact that a warrant has been issued means that locking himself in the house no longer will work. If he doesn't voluntarily come out, the police will be going in. So that's where we are with Antonio Brown. And for a while, I had no sympathy for Antonio Brown because all these decisions were done on his own. But at this point, it's just a sad story. It really is a sad story. When you see a guy this talented, and for years he was appreciated for how much of a hard worker he was, and you see this fall from grace, and it's tough to defend him, and I won't defend him, But this, to see where it is now, where it's pretty much the police are begging you to come out and you're not leaving that house and you're going to get arrested, how the mighty have fallen with Antonio Brown. From the best wide receiver in the game to now being left in the dust by three teams and deservedly so, and probably never playing again in the National Football League. When we come back, we'll chat about mental health in sports.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.